Welcome to River Talk Podcast. Today we have Zach Collier and myself, Priscilla Macy. Eric Weiseth is unable to join us today. As you know, River Talk Podcast, we try to talk about various topics related to paddling, outfitting, guiding, river, and whatever comes to our minds. Today, our topic is we are going to respond to a comment that was left on our website from our last recording, which was about emergency beacons and spot devices, Garmin devices. But before we launch into that, do we have any news of the week?
Man, I can't think of anything. Yeah. I almost think that news of the week is such a, it's starting, we don't have anything to say ever. I guess we will soon.
Maybe we should change it to like thought of the week that's off topic or something. News or thought. For me, it's not really new. Well, it's kind of news. So if you live in the Willamette Valley, you're probably familiar, and in other places, with the issues around access to runs that are on private timber, whether it be seasonal restrictions or just gates where you have to pay a fee or gates where they're just locked. There is a creek very close to where we live called Mill Creek. There's actually a number of Mill Creeks. This one's in the Coast Range in Oregon, so west of Salem, near Dallas. And it recently, so the gate had been closed for about a decade, and they recently opened the gate for recreational use. And it's an incredible resource for us, at least. It's a really fun creek, class three with a couple of class fours, really standard Coast Range scenery, lots of mossy trees and undergrowth. And I did it recently with Jacob, and I thought it really met that criteria for perfect backyard run to practice skills. And it was really rewarding and just really excited to have that resource available again.
And how far is it from where you live?
Half an hour, maybe.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And road, you know, for the most part, roadside access, just a gravel logging road that goes up along the creek, multiple places where you can choose to put in. Jacob said that when he was in college there, so there's this surf wave close to the takeout that we use. And so you can kind of just go to the surf wave. He said he used to put his study book on a rock next to the surf wave. So we'd like do a little surf session, go and do some studying, do another surf session. So I'm really excited to do some more paddling on that creek, because without some of the other resources east of Salem, like the Brighton Bush and Opal Creek, a little North Fork Santa Am, we were a little bit sad just thinking, well, what are our close to home run options going to be? And we started spending more time in the Coast Range and figured out that Mill Creek was open and that it was a great resource. So that's
how reliable is the flow? Is this like every day it's going to flow, or is it kind of like if it rains, like we're going to go?
So we're kind of compiling information for that right now. There's just a bridge gauge, like a, you know, a foot gauge, and we're tabulating what that flow correlates as. For a lot of creeks in the Coast Range, they have online gauges for the larger streams. So we're kind of figuring out what's the correlation between the major streams over there, like what percentage of the, you know, that sort of thing, so that we can kind of guess. But my guess is that there's a wide range of flows that you could run it at. You could run it pretty low, you know, just put in lower if you wanted to, or just do a shorter section. I think you could run the creek fairly high too. Obviously, with creeks in logging areas and areas with lots of trees, there's potential for wood hazards. But the nice thing about it is you can kind of scout some key parts of the creek as you're going up to put in. So you can just go there, look at it. If it doesn't look great, then you can just do a lower section and still be able to paddle.
Yeah, I think there's going to be, who knows what's going to happen with the future, but it seems like people are moving out of the cities more to small towns. You know, if you're a kayaker who had a job in, you know, a city and you had to show up to work every day, you could only kayak on the weekend. There's a lot. I was a weekend warrior for my first 15 years of paddling.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be an opportunity now for people to move to rivers. If you identify as a kayaker, you're going to move to a town that has a resource like that available.
Yeah.
The same way trails available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've definitely been talking about that recently is, well, if we only need internet and only need to go into our office, you know, every so often, how far away can we live? You know, as long as we have a reliable internet connection, that opens up a lot of doors to living in really cool places and being able to be closer to things that we like to do.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah. So that was my little thought of the week.
Yeah. I like thought of the week. I think that's a good way to look at this. I have a quick thought of the week. I may be looking for feedback from the audience. I'm playing around with static lines right now, different rescue ropes. And I think a lot of boaters don't carry them because they're so big and bulky, and wondering, you know, what technology out there exists now so that we can carry smaller static lines? Like, what's the shortest static line we can carry? And then what's the thinnest diameter that will work? So I just ordered a few different ones to test out. I'm going to play with them. But if anybody has thoughts on how we're more likely to carry rescue ropes, I'd love to hear them and you know, do our comments.
Who would be a really good person to talk with about that is there's a canyoneer. He goes by Doug Hecker online. But he is very knowledgeable about various types of rope and multiple uses of them. And we talk quite a bit. Excuse me. My goodness. Got a piece of dust in my throat. We talk about a lot of things, and he actually gets really excited to send me messages about creeks that he canyoneers. He's like, I think this one might have kayaking potential. So he's like really excited about boaters and whatnot. Actually, he thinking about it, he'd be a great guest if he'd be up for it. But he'd be a great person to talk about gear and static ropes and rope systems in general.
I got to reach out to him because I dive into when I have a topic I want to learn about, I just dive into it super hard. Yeah. And so right now I'm just really focused on static ropes. And you know what I go back to static lines from a long time ago, 15 years ago, whatever, that you just bought a static line and it was big and heavy and unwieldy. And you know, it's so big, you don't always bring it where I started in research and there's some crazy cool new rope technology out there.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to dive down that rabbit hole right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's interesting thinking about ropes and, again, thinking about canyoneering as a good resource for us because they're working in wet environments.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's obviously a huge factor for choosing your ropes and gear and, and whatnot. So cool. Yeah. We should get them on.
Well, speaking of diving down rabbit holes, the other rabbit hole I've been diving down is this emergency communication device one. And I think that's what we're talking about again. And so for those of you that are like, man, I've heard enough of this, you can just pause it out or fast forward to gear of the week. but I think I've been thinking about this a lot. We talked about it briefly in a podcast, two episodes. We spent almost all last podcast. We only meant to talk about it for a few minutes and we just went on and on.
Yeah.
And you know, for us, I just want to be clear to our audience. Like this is a discussion. Like we're here to like, the three of us share ideas, have discussions about things. This isn't a lecture on what to do. This is a discussion. And so, you know, we're the three of us going to talk things through, and hopefully through the three of us talking, you know, there's, you know, tidbits come up about different things. And then through your comments and feedback from the audience, it leads us down rabbit holes like it has on this one. Like let's go learn more about communication devices. And, you know, last episode, Eric said, I bet Garmin has some videos about this for education. And so I went down the YouTube rabbit hole for a while and definitely educated myself on, you know, how they work, when they work. So I definitely have things I want to share. But I think we just want to expand on the last episode and kind of bring more, more things we've learned in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. I just want to say one thing. I think we're also walking a line. This started because there's a Facebook group that was making fun of like people that go to REI using these for a hangnail. There's that side. And there's the other side that's like, hey, you should use it for whatever you think. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think we're walking, if we're trying to balance, you know, some people who think they're overused and some people who think that maybe people, we included, could be shaming people for using them too much. And yeah. So I think there's two sides of this coin, and our goal here is to have discussions that help shed some light on that, when they could and couldn't be used and how to use them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we try to have an open dialogue and learn from each other and bounce ideas off each other, and also bring stories and some experience to the podcast as well. Something that I think I didn't mention on the last one is the costs associated with a rescue. And depending on what state you live in, they can be significant. Like a friend of ours ended up having a $40,000 helicopter medical bill after a scenario where he absolutely needed to be extracted. It was certainly a life or death scenario, so he's obviously happy to pay that. But you know, that's also a consideration. And you know, maybe if you're someone pressing the button for someone, it's something to at least ask if they are able to make the decision for themselves. So I think what I like to think of is like a decision framework and trying to make the best decision in the scenario. Of course, evaluating, is this a life or death scenario? What are the alternatives? Not just having a knee-jerk reaction. That's what I always like to advocate for.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did some research on the, you know, every jurisdiction is different. Some will charge you, some won't.
Mm-hmm. And if you get a certain, like, for example, if you have the Coast Guard or the National Guard come mm-hmm. get you, you won't have a bill for that. That's paid for by our taxes.
But you don't get to ask for that. You'd be like, hey, we want to rescue, and we'd like the free Coast Guard one, not the expensive local search and rescue one.
You can, however, if you're able to get the message out, if you say that you need a hoist or a vertical extraction, if you communicate that to EMS, there is a chance that either the Coast Guard or the National Guard, which are the two entities that would have that capability, might be the people that would come to get you. But yes.
Is that a hack? Are you just giving people a hack?
That was a hack that was told to me by the Coast Guard, and they said, you know, feel free to share this. Of course, you're not going to get a for sure by saying that, but they did say that that's valuable information to give to whoever you're speaking to, and it helps them with their own decision framework.
And so on the topic of cost too, I in doing some research, so it's InReach is the company that sells the piece of the thing you buy.
Or Geos, one of the companies.
One of them. Yeah, that's true. There are different brands, right? There's Spot and there's InReach, which is a Garmin thing now. And I'm sure there's a few more. And separately, Geos is the organization that dispatches the call, right? Mm-hmm. They basically are the one that get contacted, and then they have contacts with people everywhere, and they know who, you know, in every jurisdiction, who the search and rescue or who the first responders would be. And Geos sells some insurance. And mm-hmm. I did some quick research. It was only $17 a year.
Yeah.
So it's not that expensive, and it could cover
separate insurance programs for backcountry as well. And the insurance is really great. I think that in some of those programs, it helps reimburse search and rescue entities. And Oregon funding for county search and rescue is a huge thing. For example, smaller rural counties, one search and rescue can eat up their entire budget for the year.
Yeah.
So if insurance is something that you feel like would be valuable, not only personally, financially, but also helps out local search and rescue, law enforcement and volunteer units, that's all the better.
And Priscilla, that's the first thing on my things I want to talk about is like when you press it, like considering, or when you ask for emergency evacuation, consider you're taxing the search and rescue, the local search and rescue. I know in Oregon, like a lot of counties are asking for higher search and rescue budgets, like they're underfunded and they're unable to respond to, I think we talked about this in a previous episode too, but they're unable to respond to everything they want to. And it's the local cities and counties are fitting the bill for these Do you know more about that? That's all I know is there's a lot of issues with that.
I'm not sure if it's introduced yet, but we, through a group of outdoor recreation advocates, co-wrote legislation with the Oregon Sheriff's Association and Office of Emergency Management to establish a voluntary fee mechanism that would help support county search and rescue in forms of reimbursement, equipment cost, also being able to reimburse volunteer search and rescue units that play an integral role in these operations. And what it would do is, it could be at a point of sale, you're at REI, you say, I want to contribute $10. You buy a search and rescue card for $10 or $25. That money goes to that program. That legislation is yet to be introduced and is just a first step in solving a large systemic problem. But there's ongoing conversations with the recreation community and search and rescue and law enforcement to try to solve this issue. And it's been a really collaborative and positive process. And I think what I've learned from it is kind of what we've talked about in previous podcasts, is just creating relationships, meaning the recreation community with those entities, can go a really long way in many, many ways.
Yeah. I do know that here in Hood River that there's so many visitors and so many people hiking that we're being overtaxed. The search and rescue team here is, you know, can't handle all the rescues they need to do.
Yeah. And then if you go further east, like Wasco County, you know, even more limited resources because you have less of a population there, but high visitation. So I think moving on, we can talk a little bit about when you're choosing to press the button or when you're choosing to send a message to your contact list and your device. I think obviously make the best decision for yourself. I think the heart at what we were trying to get at is, if one of us was out on a trip where, you know, our husband or wife or friend knew where we were and it was a non-life-threatening situation, maybe we ran out of daylight, needed to hike out, and maybe needed someone to meet us with a car, I think that that would be a time to send a text message and not to send a message to emergency response units. Because ideally, if you are someone doing a adventure or trip in an area where you may have those consequences, you're giving information to someone that would be able to then act or relay that information. Of course, when you're in a life and death scenario, you have to make the right decision. And sometimes that decision is pressing the SOS button, which also would inform your contact list what's going on and that law enforcement has been advised.
Yeah, it's interesting what happens. I didn't realize it went out to your emergency contact list as well. And the dispatch contacts your emergency contact list to let them know there's an emergency and to ask for more information.
Yeah.
That was interesting. And you can put a lot of information in your account. Your Garmin has you create an account, for example, you know, any medical issues you have, you know, it's pretty, you can add your own information that gives responders background they need when they need to come in.
Yeah. And I would say something that's valuable, if you are a person that has a medical condition or something that would need to be known in a scenario like that, that you input that information into the system or you know, in your pack, or, you know, I know a lot of people wear bracelets to say I'm diabetic or whatnot. That's super valuable in those scenarios as well.
Yeah, I'm the kind of person that would buy it and do the minimum amount it takes to set it up, right? And not, and they, if they're going to say, go log in, create an account, and I would just be like, I don't want to deal with that. And in researching it, the account's actually really useful in terms of saying who your emergency contacts are and personal information about yourself. And I think you can even put itineraries for trips in there, you know, so you can I'm going here for these days, just, you know, so you guys know.
Yeah, that's super valuable. That's one of the things that Jacob and I did very early on, if we were doing separate trips, and is, you know, these are kind of the areas that I'm going to be in. If you don't hear from me in 12 hours, then call my dad. He has more information. And I've certainly used that before. And I think the value of having information to folks can't be overstated. And folks that are capable of dealing with that type of scenario. So, you know, I wouldn't have that information given to my grandma living in Southern California. yeah, super valuable.
And on the topic of when, we talked a lot about when, you know, when you could possibly use them. I think that's an interesting topic. It was to me, you know, or maybe having, I feel like a cheat sheet of like these things would necessitate using it, these wouldn't. And I think there's definitely some like pushback on the cheat sheet. I think the cheat sheet has one advantage is it reminds people of what are symptoms of certain life threatening issues. And I feel like one thing, there's two ways this can happen. One is I think people think it could keep people from pressing the button when maybe they should, but also I think people sometimes are hesitant to press the button if they have some life-threatening issue. Like I know I was on a trip where somebody had heart attack symptoms and he really didn't want to leave, you know? So having something that's like, no, with these symptoms, you really need to get out of there.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know. I generally feel through these discussions that everybody thinks it's a bad idea. So I'm going to go with that. Right. Like I'm a person who like throws ideas out there and learns and like, okay, cool. I get that's a bad idea. But in my mind, I'm like, ah, it'd be nice to have like some sort of thing. But the cool thing about the devices is that when you press the button, some of them, you know, have textability as well. Most of them do now. And so then the geos can say, hey, is this an equipment problem or a medical problem? And you can respond. And then if it's a medical problem, you can give them symptoms. You know, they can, there's a dialogue there. It's not just press the button and you have a $40,000 helicopter bill. Yeah. There can be dialogue with geos, which is pretty cool and I think really helpful. But I was researching, I watched a bunch of YouTube videos about this, and there's two things I read that I really liked in terms of when to use it. And the first one, I think this comes from Knowles actually, and it says when in danger of life and limb.
Yep.
I think that's a simple one, right? We talked about having your arm cut off last time. Yeah, that's maybe
simple. Yeah, yeah. What was the other one that you saw?
When the outcome is uncertain.
That one's hard. Because I mean, yeah. But, you know, use critical thinking and think about that. I think something that I thought about too is, you know, if you're a commercial entity or you're running a trip where someone's paying you, there is a different liability spectrum. And having been a part of an accident where we had to justify the actions that we took for our insurance company, it is really important to have that checklist and to document and to do all those things as an individual and being protected generally by Good Samaritan laws. We have a lot more authority to act, if we are acting within our ability level and with the idea that we're helping someone. So I think as a commercial company, deciding a medical decision or a rescue decision comes with a lot more weight and documentation. If you're on a personal trip, it becomes more simple. And going back to one of our other previous podcasts, you don't want to fall into your own heuristic traps of like, I need to check this box, and this box, and this means this outcome. I think putting yourself in a position where you're able to make those decisions when it is the important time is the most important part. Just being able to make competent decisions in a calm mind frame and knowing that you made a good decision, whether it is to push the button or not to push the button.
And I think erring on the side of pushing a button is not a bad thing.
No.
And especially with the ones with the two-way communication, because there's two devices. There's the ones where there's a button. It's like emergency, right? Mm-hmm. And there's some where there's a button, but there's also the ability to communicate back and forth. And you can stop. The other cool thing I read about is you can stop the emergency. So if you press the button and then situation changes an hour later, you can – there's a button or something you can do. You have to, everyone's different, where you can say, oh, never mind, we got this figured out.
So I think one of the lessons is, if you, whatever device you buy, make sure that you actually read how to use it, watch the videos on the website where you bought it, read the manual, and refresh that knowledge when needed, so that if something happens, you're not like, oh my gosh, what do I do with this thing? What button means what?
Yeah. And now reading, I don't know if I'm going to read the manual, because I'm not a big fan of reading manuals, but I have to say, I spent some time watching two videos last night, and I know how to use them. Like I mean, I've used them a bunch, but really diving deep was educational. And I think I'm going to put a video on our website that I watched. I thought it was really a hiker guy. It's like hikerblog.com or something, has a YouTube channel. And he talks about how they work, but then also gives some scenarios of when you should and shouldn't use them. You know, I think the examples were all hiking related, but it was like, you know, inexperienced hiker, you know, unprepared for the cold, sprains ankle. You know, do you do it or don't do it, right? Versus like, you know, experienced hiker, you know, with overnight gear, bruises their leg. You know, and he runs it. They're not always that simple. There's definitely gray area decisions a lot, but I think it's a good video because he, again, talks about them. He gives some examples of when to and not use them. And he ran these through his local search and rescue just to get their feedback as well. So that, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So I'll put that video up on the website if anybody wants to watch. I think it's like 15 minutes long.
Yeah. I think more information is never bad. And YouTube is a great passive way of learning.
That's what I did. I watched it while I was having dinner.
Nice.
It's a long video. So just to sit there and only watch it, I think with my short attention span would be hard. I had to be doing something else.
Yeah. Trying to think what other thoughts I had.
For me, the biggest thing I think is my goal in discussing them is to have people just to have them. Mm-hmm. I think that's where the basis of this whole, you know, the foundation of this is I feel like we should have these things. And especially in light of the tragedy on Canaan Creek, that being one of their outcomes is them believing that people should have them. I'm now on that page. And so I went before to like, yeah, it'd be nice. They're kind of nice to have. And, you know, commercially, obviously we have responsibility to have them. But now for me, I feel like on a regular basis, it's something that I don't say people have to have, but I would encourage them to have.
Yeah. I mean, for me, there's a few things that I feel like through experience and with conversations like this, I just have things. So, you know, if I'm going into bear country, I will bring bear spray. I've never used it before. I could have my spot device and never use it before, but I would certainly rather have it and know how to use it than to find myself in a scenario where I'm lacking and wished I had something to do something.
Yep. So, I mean, I'm ready to move on from this topic. I think like we've covered it pretty well. And that leads me to another project I've been doing, which is I'm creating myself a little like emergency kit. And it's kind of a weird thing to create, but I already have a first aid kit. I guess your first aid kit could be an emergency kit, but I think this is one of those like in case of emergency break glass kind of kits. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like this thing doesn't get used except in emergencies. So our first aid kits, you go in and out of them. I like, you know, even here at home, I'll go in and get a Band-Aid out of my paddling first aid kit, or I'll grab the scissors out to do something and maybe leave them behind. But I bought myself a little like I think it's 6-inch by 8-inch little bag. Mm-hmm. I think you can't, if you think of emergencies, you can't bring everything. You want to bring everything. People are like, oh, bring this and this and that, and it adds up. And so I bought this bag to limit the size. I'm like, what size bag would I throw in if I went hiking? My backpack went hiking. What size bag am I going to take on a raft trip? What size bag am I going to throw in my kayak? What size bag if I go horseback riding, which I will not do, right? But if I did, and I did like 100-mile horseback, what would I carry, right? So it's like a thing that doesn't get opened. And I'm trying to think of what would go in that bag.
Yeah.
And the beacon, of course, would go in there. And some other items, I think we talked about this, would be like emergency blankets. maybe a whistle, fire starters. Yep. I'm looking over right now at some of the different things. I don't think I put a knife in there, but I also, through this process of like researching what I put in there, especially for paddling, I think CPR is something that's important to us. Mm-hmm. And having a CPR mask is important.
And you can get little tiny, just plastic ones. So I have a few of those. I think I have
like one. The micro shields.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And I've been doing more research into them. And one of the issues with the micro shields with COVID is you're going to, take in that person's air. And so I started thinking about bag valve masks, and somebody wrote me an email or left a comment somewhere about this product called a mini BVI. It's a mini bag valve mask, and it's slightly bigger than the pocket masks. I'll put a link to it in the thing, but it's something I'm considering bringing because then you can do CPR and use a bag valve mask, which for those of you who don't know, it's just like a, instead of breathing in somebody's mouth, you like have a bag you just compress. And yeah. It forces air into their lungs. And it's the air outside, I think it's like 21% oxygen. Maybe it's 19. I should know this. But when we breathe out, it's like 14 or 15% oxygen. So it's higher amounts of oxygen if you use the bag valve mask. So I'm trying to decide, is in my little kit, is that mini BVI something I want to bring?
I think
everything.
Yeah, it's worth considering. I think something to think about too is that American Heart Association, and others, there's, been enough evidence that compression, chest compressions, mm-hmm. is the most important thing. So mm-hmm. at least be able to do that. But also if you're able, have the ability to give breaths, but remember that doing compressions does help a lot.
It does.
Do more research.
And we have a doctor coming on in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I have a doctor scheduled to talk about some of this stuff. And, I'm not a doctor. I don't want to pretend like I am. But from what I've been hearing from talking to people is that, like, in drowning, the breaths are more important than normal.
Yeah.
So, like, if somebody has a heart attack on the street, yeah, compressions are great without breaths. They're fine without breaths.
Clearing the liquid in the airway. Like figuring out how to do that if they did aspirate becomes more important.
Yeah. So and that's where maybe this mini BVI is kind of a cool thing for us to consider because we're able to give rescue breaths without actually doing mm-hmm. it with our mouth.
Yeah.
And that might be something that might be more important for paddlers than let's say like mountain bikers or hikers or motorboaters or jet skiers or whatever. Yeah. So anyway, I just want to let you know, I'm on this journey right now mm-hmm. to find the perfect little rescue kit for me.
Yeah, I think
and
that's
I'm super,
great.
I'm super excited about it. So, it's something, again, that like I've thought more about since this, reading that accident report on Canyon Creek, that I'm going to put a lot of time and energy and listeners, you'll probably get bored by it over this journey that I'm on. But part of the journey is this doctor, this who's a wilderness medic. He does wilderness doctoring, whatever that title is. He's going to come on and hopefully we ask him questions. So if anybody out there has questions to ask, please send us a note because that'd be super helpful.
Something I'd like to add about making med kits. When I used to teach wilderness first responder, first aid and all that, you can go online and buy a basic safety kit, but it can't stress the value and importance in packing your own, whether that's buying one that's pre-made and knowing exactly what's in it and kind of filling in gaps. But, just having a med kit and you don't know what's in it until you need to use it can be a little daunting and scary. You can find yourself lacking. So I think I have a really big med kit that lives in my car that has everything from, large wound stuff, gunshot wound stuff, bone breaks, all that sort of thing, emergency flares. And then I have a very lightweight mountain biking kit that always lives in my mountain biking camelback. I have a lightweight, the water bottle kit that I talked about in previous podcasts for paddling. I really like the idea. I think what you're saying, Zach, is having one kit that you take for, no matter what, where you go is valuable. I'm someone that forgets stuff. So I have multiple kits, which is a little more expensive, but they're tailored exactly to what I want them to be. And they just live in the gear that I always know that I take with me on those certain adventures. And in the car kit, I would say I put more effort into, and having learned how to be a mechanic over the last year, that kit has gotten more expensive.
it has a impact driver in it now.
Yeah. but you know, having jumper cables, making sure that you have the ability to change your own tire, a battery jump starter.
I really like is that thing. There's a canister you hook up to your tire, and it can fill it up with some sealant.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a little pokey thing that pokes through the tire, and it has like a, I don't know what it's called, some kind of vulcanizing thing.
Rubber, galvanizing rubber.
Yeah, that's kind of a nice bonus thing to have too.
Yeah. So depending on what you do and where you go, you know, if you're not going to end up stranded somewhere where AAA can't get you, or it's going to be a long haul to get out, having an expansive car kit is valuable. You know, same thing goes for the river. If you're doing roadside runs where you can hike out to the road, your kit might be smaller than someone that does multi-day trips where extraction would really only be by emergency responders.
Yep. So that's something that's a journey. I want to take everybody on slowly over the next few months, and I'll share it with everybody as it goes. Cause I feel like, you know, I think one thing we can do with the podcast is just share, you know, there's no agent, there's no like, when you want to get into boating, here's what you do. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just, you learn from the people you boat with, you kind of make it up as you go. And, you know, I think I had good mentors that said, you do these things. And I think one of the things about the podcast is we can share these things we're working on and hopefully get feedback from everybody. Like, hey, here's something I suggest. And I know what's going to happen is this list of things is going to grow massively. And that's why I've constrained myself to a size.
Yeah.
And what can I fit in that bag?
Yeah. And I think once again, just our hope is to share information, not rules necessarily. Yeah. So we'll provide a bunch of things that we do and what we've found out. And then it's kind of your job to do the additional research and comprehensive thinking about what is most useful for you.
Yeah. Well, should we wrap this one up, Priscilla, with Gear of the Week?
Yeah, I'm down. Do you have any?
I do. I experimented with some new river shoes this summer. I power through river shoes like you wouldn't believe. And so I got some Arc'teryx. I know this Arc'teryx is expensive, but there's I think it's the Norvan SL. It's a running shoe, and it's a mesh though. Instead of being like a typical running shoe, it actually is like a plastic mesh. And I used it a lot. You can't really fit a shoe. I can't fit a shoe in a kayak. I'm too tall. So I don't use it for kayaking, but for rafting and ducking and supping and stuff, it's been amazing. And I've beat it really hard. And the cool thing about it is you can be on the river and get to camp, and because it's just like plastic mesh, it dries really fast, and you can go hiking in it because it's a running shoe.
Nice.
And so like what I'll do is I'll get to camp, but I'll take them off for like 10 minutes, put them in the sun, you get some of the dirt and rocks out, like shake them a little bit and set it down. So they're expensive. I think like $190 for a pair. But from my experience, they last as long as so far as like two pair of Astrals. And again, the Astrals are cool. You can go hiking in them too, but they're worth checking out.
Awesome. My gear of the week, I haven't tried it out yet, but I just got a GoPro Black 7, and it has the little screen on the back where you can watch footage afterwards, and you can also remotely control it. So if you want to do like, a self-view video, you can put it on a rock and control it remotely if you wanted to. What I'm most excited about it, though, is I think I mentioned before, is I really like using GoPros to analyze myself, whether it's mountain biking or paddling. But the the lacking part with my GoPro session, which I really like because of its simplicity, is I can't look at it right away. So if I'm doing laps on a rapid, I have to wait till I go home and then wait till I go back there again. So I really like the instant replay screen on the back of this GoPro. And I think I'll use it a lot for learning is all.
Wait, so Priscilla, you're going to run. Okay. Let me get this straight. You're going to run a rapid with the GoPro on, eddy out, pull your GoPro off, watch yourself go, ooh, I could do this better. Now walk your kayak back up the top of the rapid with the GoPro on again and do it again.
Yeah, or I'll have Jacob hold the GoPro so I can see a better view of like what I'm doing. But I'm thinking in these scenarios, I would be doing that anyway, like on a creek like Mill Creek. There's lots of rapids you can run again or run differently. And so I'll look at it and be like, oh, I could have had a more vertical stroke, or I could have pulled through longer on that deep water boof. I'm going to go practice that and see if I can do that again. Or when I'm surfing, I can't figure out why I keep making the same mistake and flipping over. Look at the footage. One drop my edge. Because, you know, there's so much going on when you're paddling. You're not necessarily aware of all the things that you're doing. So I think that looking at it from a third person or the first person perspective and like looking at it frame by frame, figuring out why you didn't run the rapid exactly how you thought you did, will be really valuable for me. And I think it's a tool that, if you're able to, people that want to improve their skills or are learning how to paddle, it's a really valuable tool too.
What do you think of people? I notice sometimes people like take GoPro themselves and then put them on a Facebook, like PDX kayaker, and they're like, hey, how can I get better? What do you think about that?
There's a forum, there's a female paddler group. It's like only female paddlers from around the country and world. And we do that a lot. And I think that it's really valuable when you have the right audience giving you feedback. I think in most sports, people are really quick to say, I know how to do everything right. Here's the absolute truth of how to fix things. But if you have people that are really willing to have an open discussion and say, well, hey, yeah, I realized that I was always missing my boofs. And what it was is I wasn't keeping my paddle in the water long enough to actually boof, or I was taking my stroke too early. That's really valuable. And I found that in some forums with the right audience that is in that kind of teaching open mindset, super valuable. But when you have a lot of opinionated and not necessarily qualified people, unqualified captains, giving people advice, it can be hurtful and detrimental to people that are actually wanting to get advice. And you also have to actually want advice, not just be wanting to show off your GoPro videos. That's the other part of it.
Yeah. Hey, look at me running this draw perfectly. Any ideas how I can get better?
Yes. Like that one's weird. Maybe share that with your friends.
This reminds me of a conversation I had with my friend last night. She's recently gotten to paddling, has gotten really good quick, and she wants to get more friends in the sport, but it's really hard right now because there's no instruction, right? There's no kayak club outings. I heard the Otter Bar is closing down now. They're a great place to get instruction. Like, there's probably way less instruction. So she's lucky to have had a lot of friends who are good kayakers and they had pool sessions, but with the lack of pool sessions, it's hard to get into the sport right now.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, that's true. That's a bummer. And I just had this realization, and it's probably a bummer for kayak schools because they're probably struggling, you know, because what they do is instruction, and instruction's hard to do because you're speaking at somebody. But wouldn't it be, what do you think about like a kayak school offering instruction through a video? It's like, go kayaking, upload your YouTube video to us, pay us $20 and we'll sit down with you and walk through what you're doing and give you things to work on. And then it's like $20 a session. I'm a business person, so I'm just brainstorming business and solving the problem of the people needing to learn to kayak and the classes.
I think that's a great idea. I think there's a lot of possibilities there. I think I've realized on YouTube, because I spend a lot more time watching it since the pandemic, there's a lot of channels that have really good instructional videos for various things. And I find myself learning a lot from it. I think that class idea is a great idea. And I think that would probably be something that people would would want to do and would get value out of.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's people are struggling getting into the sport right now. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a good way to do it. Maybe long term, like I know I want to get better at kayaking all the time. I'm self-taught. I have terrible, terrible form. I'm very limited by my inability to paddle correctly. But I do want an instruction. I just don't want to have to, you know, go to a place and go through it all. It would actually be interesting for me to like send some video of myself to an instructor to say, hey, give me feedback. I'm just thinking about this right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to maybe think about doing this. Give me feedback on what I'm doing and then give me some based on my paddling, give me some exercises to work on. And then my next time paddling and go do those on my own.
I think that's a great idea. I know the Sarah Solsey's brothers and Evan Garcia ran some really cool classes both mm-hmm. in the States and abroad. And I had friends who took those classes and they got a lot because of the instruction style and, you know, the amount of time spent on the water. But I think there's a lot to be said for having paddlers of that stature that also have the ability to teach and analyze, looking at people's footage and saying, hey, well, these are the things that you can do to improve it. Let's touch base again the next time or after you've been on the water again, practicing those skills, and let's see what else we can work on.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
One last thing. I hope you take your GoPro all the cool places you go.
I'll try.
I mean, that's so cool to see videos of some of these really unique places.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm excited. I'm going to try to make it more of a habit.
Yeah. I've been mountain biking with my dog a lot lately. We have a puppy and it's so fun to watch her just like in front of me, just go crazy. And so I've been meaning to put a GoPro on my handlebars. I want to start a new YouTube channel that's just following my dog on bike rides.
Awesome.
She's a puppy. Cause when they get older, they're not as rambunctious. They're just kind of like fun. Yeah. But like right now she is full crazy.
Awesome. Well, should we wrap this one up?
Let's wrap it up. Do you want to do the awkward ending?
Yeah, I guess. Float down the river, dragging a line. Float down the river, taking my sweet time over the river.